It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, love your lies. Feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome to the show. I got a text right before this show started about what was so memorable about the John and Land show that we could put up on YouTube for our ESPN Houston channel. And I thought to myself, I don't remember. Yeah, I'm in the middle of it, but I can't remember what was so great about that show, mostly because I'm always at the thought of saying there's nothing that great about that show. But Sam, our social media person, wants to know. She wants to put a clip together. So if anyone remembers anything that happened in that show that should go up on YouTube, let me know. Because I don't remember. I think we talked about the Astros in the first segment on that show. I can't say it's YouTube quality type entertainment. But if you were listening, maybe you got the day off, or maybe you just like to listen from 7 to whatever. Whenever your radio listening day comes to an end, let me know. You can tweet at me, call the show. I don't know. She needs a segment for John and Lance.
Have Alan do it.
He's doing the pot. Yeah, Alan, if you're still out there, tell me what you thought was the best part of the John and Lance show. That doesn't have any real humor in it, because there are like, hey, could you do it and make it like sports heavy?
Yeah.
Because that plays well. Because if those guys make a joke and it offends people, for people who don't listen to the show, It can cause some problems. A joke out of context. So, Alan, or anyone else who happened to be listening from 7 to 10, let me know. I don't know. It's a first world radio problem for me, but it's like, okay, let me try to remember what happened and see if anything is worthy enough for YouTube. So,
yeah.
If you guys don't like what pops up, either blame yourself or blame Alan. That's all there is to it.
Blame Alan, blame yourself, blame Sam.
Yeah,
don't blame Del.
Just don't blame me. Eventually, it'll probably come down to me anyway. But remember, if you don't come up with the idea, then I have to. Someone who has a lack of interest in that show as it is. So we'll see. But we did start the Astros from 7 to 10, and we'll start this show after I aired my grievances. If you had gone to the Sunday night game, I don't know how many people do this. They just like, they go to Astros games consistently. You go to the Sunday night game, the other day off, you go to the Monday game. You got to be like, oof, these games are starting off really poorly. Particularly that bomb that Geloff hit. You're like, hey, I remember the sound of an opposing team's bat knocking my starting pitcher around. Now, Arrigetti got it together. He didn't go the Verlander route where he was ruined in three innings, but if you had happened to buy tickets to Sunday night's game and Monday night's game, you guys be like, this is familiar. The crack of the bat is loud. My starting pitcher is getting destroyed. And we're not going to win this game. Like I said, Arrigetti got it together. The rest of the bullpen, or excuse me, the rest of the pitchers who made an appearance, they're okay. In fact, they were better than okay until we got to Hector Neris in extra innings. So the Astros go down 4-3. They had multiple chances, obviously, when they were holding down the A's to push a run across in the 10th and the 11th. They could not, and it gave the A's an opportunity. And they finally pushed some runs across in the, I believe, the 12th inning as the Astros go down to the A's. So the homestand started out pretty good. You're dominating the Diamondbacks. And it has turned with particularly the start for Verlander now not being able to come through with Arrigetti on the mound. And he's been the victim of that, right? He was the pitcher who was getting the least run support. So his win-loss record didn't match the way he was pitching. Yesterday was another one of those games. The Tucker-Bregman combo going 0-for-11. So that's rough. 3-4 can't do that. 3-4 can't do that against Jack Sears. 3-4 can't do that in what is still a pennant race, or excuse me, at least a division race, and also when you're trying to gain ground on the leaders in the AL, trying to secure a top two seed. That's, I ain't going to say it's unacceptable, because who am I to say it's unacceptable? But you can't have it. Those guys got to be better, and they stunk. And we know Tucker is trying to work his way back, and Bregman is a guy who's dealing with something he's going to have to deal with all year long, at least the rest of the season long, until he likely has to have off-season surgery. But that was a rough one yesterday. The Astros go down. But, hey, I do like Arrigetti not allowing the first couple runs through the first two innings to be something that changed the way he pitched. He is someone who even bounces. He bounces back in game. He bounces back from poor outings. I don't think we have to worry about him as a guy who's going to allow adversity to affect him going forward. We have that with a couple of our guys. Now, one of those guys never pitches, but McCullers can be someone who at the drop of a ball, in this case, whether it be an error or he gives up a bomb, that can change the complexion of his start. We know Fromber has those issues too, although lately Fromber's been great. But it can always crop up. Arrigetti doesn't seem like the type. Even when he gets smacked around in a game, I don't expect it to be something that's going to mess with him in his next outing. And even from inning to inning, he doesn't seem like the type who is going to allow a bad inning or a bad call to mess with him. So that's good. He bounces back, but you don't get the hitting necessary to win. So you go down. The film is out if you are someone who does the All-22 stuff. Like there are a lot of people who fancy themselves as experts because they have access to All-22. They will give their own grades. They will tell PFF, you dummies, you don't know anything. I know more. I'm watching the film. And at least right now, Kenyon Green is a winner if I just go by Twitter analysts. They watch him be physical, get up to the second level. And we talked about this yesterday. The fact that he may be another hit is great for Nick Caserio's resume. And this became a topic of conversation earlier in the summer. A caller called in and because I was complimenting Caserio and on hitting on Stingley and obviously Stroud and Will Anderson, Tank Dell. He was like, hold on, Dell. Hold on. Can't give him too much credit because that Kenyon Green thing seems like a whiff. Let's wait on him. He also, I think, mentioned, let's have Stingley play a whole season. So there was some pushback, and at least through week one, if I go by people who think they know things. And I saw some of the clips, too. Kenyon Green did look good. He's a guy who, if you hit on that, all of a sudden you have an above-average guard where you had questions. Now, the Texans were great in the run game, but they did struggle with some of the things the Colts did with their games on the line. It wasn't just guys getting beat one-on-one. So it wasn't a question of, oh, you're just outmatched. The stunts, the games, those are the ones that got the Texans, and that's why you saw a lot of times CJ being overwhelmed really, really quickly. He got hit 10 times, sacked W 4 times. So that's something that needs to be cleaned up. You can see that on those clips that are floating around. The Colts got the Texans with games, with line movements. So if the NFL is something where you can learn something from the previous week's film, expect the Bears to do that too. They have a big-time pass rusher in Montez Sweat. They had I think Darrell Taylor, a guy they made a trade for, had a big day as well. The Bears were really good defensively against the Titans, and their defense special teams help win them that game. So until the Texans prove otherwise, I think you can probably expect a lot of teams to use games, use stunts, because if you go man for man, particularly your tackles, Tunsil and Titus Howard, at least Titus Howard's paid like he's supposed to be good. Tunsil is a very good player. We just got to clean up the false starts, and you hope because he's not in an opposing building, although it will be loud at NRG. I imagine Bears fans will be there. You don't think he's going to suffer the same issues and the offensive line won't suffer the same procedure issues they had. Now, we have a Bears fan who works here, Sean. You work with him on a daily basis, Joe George. Now, Joe George will present himself as unbiased throughout the week, I imagine. Hell, he may even present himself as rooting for the Texans for Sunday night. I don't know Joe George's strength as far as rooting interest. I'm not sure how deep that Bears love goes. You work with him. He probably doesn't talk a lot of Bears football on the show unless he's prompted to, but he does have his own Bears. Is it a YouTube channel, Instagram thing he does? But he does talk Bears football outside of here. Mm-hmm. Once the game kicks off, yeah, all the stuff Monday through Friday, Texans, whatever. But once the game kicks off on Sunday night, will Joe George, when that first play, when that first snap, if CJ's dropping back the pass, will he be rooting for Montez Sweat to sack him?
Yes.
You think that's a definite for you? Yes. It won't even be a question.
I'm pretty sure he is going to be. I'd be very surprised if he's rooting for the Texans. Now, I could see a thing where he, Bears disappointing on offense, 1-0, but disappointing on offense yesterday or on Sunday. I can see him, if things start going poorly, being like, the vengeful root against his own team. Like, yeah, make it embarrassing for these guys.
What?
So they fire Eberflus.
You think he has that in him?
Yes.
Okay.
I know he has that.
Okay.
So I think at kickoff, he's gonna be rooting for the Bears.
No doubt about it. But if things start going a certain way, he won't even be rooting for the Texans. He'll just be rooting for a Bears disaster.
Yes.
Okay. I like that.
He gets hysterical.
I like the honesty. Yeah, there's no chance he's rooting for the Texans.
He's already on fire, Marcus Freeman.
Well,
he loved Marcus Freeman like 5 days ago.
Don't lose to Northern Illinois.
I know, but that's how I'm saying things can change very quickly.
I did. It wasn't a real troll, but I did go, hey, when he came in on Monday after we were done, I came in and asked something along the lines of, I was giving him feel worse about Caleb Williams' performance or Notre Dame's performance. Oh. He goes, obviously Notre Dame's. Obviously.
At least Caleb Williams playing against NFL players.
Yeah. Yeah, he mentioned he was done with Marcus Freeman because the Marshall loss happened and of course the Stanford loss happened too. So those are the three. And I think if Marcus Freeman doesn't have a really good year, no matter when he's fired, the Northern Illinois loss will be the one where everyone points to go, okay, this is what got you fired.
He will not – he'll likely not get fired this year. However, when he does get fired, yes, like you said, not just the Northern Illinois. His resume of losing as a 20-point favorite.
Particularly
when – that's going to come up.
Yeah, particularly when, as much as they disliked Brian Kelly's actions off the field because he wasn't the perfect coach when it comes to fundraising and talking to the important people in the Notre Dame program.
Putting cameramen in.
Well, that's something I didn't want to get to, but yes.
They probably don't like him.
Probably not a great thing for him either. But it wasn't like Marcus Freeman took over a program that was in the gutter.
Yeah.
He didn't take over
for a fired coach. Yeah,
went to LSU. He took over for a guy who kept winning, had double-digit win seasons. He's turned Notre Dame into a 9-win team. So that's going to be a problem, particularly when you're losing – to Northern Illinois and others. So enough about Joe George. I do think it's funny that all week he'll be Texans. But once it starts to matter on Sunday, he's going to sneak on that Caleb Williams jersey at home.
Well, he's not going to be at home.
He's going to the game.
He's going to be at NRG Stadium because he and his dad are Texans season ticket holders.
Sure.
But they're showing up.
They're showing up to watch the Bears. They're not going to
Brian Urlacher jersey.
He's not going to wear an Urlacher jersey. Maybe his dad will.
Yeah. Maybe Devin Hester.
Lance Briggs. but yeah, it's understandable. He grew up a Bears fan. I get it. But keep pretending like you're rooting.
On Monday, he showed up in one of the new
the red Stroud jersey just to sell it. I get it. You gotta hide your true self from people. Understood. I understand. So Joe George, you can hear him pretend to be a Texans fan later today from 12 to 3. At least this week. I'm sure he roots for the Texans normally, but he's going to pretend this week from 12 to 3. When we come back, I mentioned the Texans, particularly Kenyon Green was a winner with the film out. Well, you have to have some losers too. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Jerry Jones spoke about his lack of he didn't particularly like how Dak and CeeDee Lamb handled their contract conversation. So we'll talk about, we'll hear from Jerry. We'll talk about that as well. The U.S. men's national team have officially announced their coach, and it's not a moment too soon considering they're tying New Zealand in a home game that no one cared about to go to because the program doesn't have a lot of juice behind them. They certainly hope the new hire helps that. We'll get into that. Some other NFL stuff to get into. We're just getting started. We'll be back, but first I want to talk about my bookie. We got a Thursday night game tonight, or excuse me, tomorrow night. We've got the Astros tonight as well. And I bring up multiple sports because my bookie will allow you to bet on anything you really want from Major League Baseball to the NFL to college football. If there's a major tennis tournament you're into, they'll have that for you too. Golf, all of it. That's what my bookie provides. That's why they tell you, bet on anything, anywhere, and anytime. But with Thursday coming up, remember, they have their weekly risk-free boosts on Thursdays where you can bet without a sweat. If your bet hits, you win big. If it doesn't, you can forget it. My bookie will refund your wager. Just use promo code BET975 to claim some extra bank on your first deposit. And also, it'll help you if you're an existing customer as well. Remember, the bigger you deposit, the bigger your bonus. And if you check out the new loyalty program with MyBookie, it's called MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more you win. It's simple. Climb through the tiers of the loyalty rewards program to unlock even more epic promotions, exclusive giveaways, and bigger rewards. MyBookie Plus is the lock of the century. Just go to MyBookie.ag. Remember, bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
Kane is in the building now.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Weekly guest on the Gallant and George Show. His name is DJ Bienname. And there's an article from him on ESPN right now about CJ Stroud, the film junkie. I think that we even played a clip. There's a clip of him saying this like early in the summer that one of CJ's goals was to take more command of the offense. I think it's played every. I think it's the promo for DJ being on, and that's kind of the headline for the article. And it is interesting when people just look at things and they assume just by watching, I guess, the broadcast copy of what's going on, and. We don't really know. We can see CJ making a call, making a check here, but we don't know the grasp of the offense that he has. Because in some cases, with the Shanahan offense, a lot of people believe it's point and shoot with the quarterback. I tell you to do this, you do this. And it kind of, in some ways, is an offense that babies a quarterback. Fat quarterbacks who've played in the system kind of get criticized for not being the traditional quarterback. We know Tom Brady even earlier this summer was discussing how quarterback is different now because it's more about the play caller than it is about the quarterback. And this article talks about how CJ has taken more control of this offense, an offense that kind of puts in training wheels to help even lesser talented quarterbacks be productive. Now, after year one, I don't think there's any question about, at least for most people, about what CJ is capable of, but the system is one that will accentuate your strengths, which all systems should do, but it does a great job of covering up any weaknesses you might have. CJ, at least from the article and all his work, wants to become more the driver of the offense as opposed to someone who happens to just be playing in it. And it's a long article about taking command of the offense and all the plaudits and nice words you hear in the offseason about your star quarterback. So you can read that. DJ Bienname, guest of Kalant and George. He was on yesterday. He'll be on next week as well, discussing obviously the Texans versus the Bears. I mentioned, if you want to call them losers, let's just say not winners. Losers is tough in week one. I mean, it might be correct, but
they did lose.
Well, not, I ain't talking about the Colts, like the Texans players who didn't play particularly well.
Oh,
when I mean losers, like winners and losers. Yeah, winners and losers from the game. Like I mentioned, the offensive line or Kenyon Green as a winner. The Azeez Al-Shaair tape isn't great for him. I ain't gonna call the man a loser. I'm just gonna say he didn't play up to his standard. How about that? He didn't play up to a standard. his standard. I mean, some people might say, hey, he kind of played how he plays. But up to his standard.
Need some mores. Winners, and I need a little bit more.
I need a little bit more out of you, Aziz Ashaer. He didn't play well on Sunday. The secondary certainly had their issues. Kamari Laster is being isolated for not covering A.D. Mitchell very well, and we know it didn't turn into anything because Anthony Richardson is who he is, and he missed some passes. So your middle linebacker did not play great, and your corner opposite of Stingley didn't play great. And even Stingley, I don't know if you want to put all of Alec Pierce's bomb on him, but even Stingley had a part to play in an explosive. So the Texans gave up too many explosives. We heard from D'Amico Ryans about it. You got to get that cleaned up because the Bears aren't going to be a team who moves the ball on them consistently. And there's a question of whether they'll have one of their weapons, Roma Dunze, who I talked about yesterday having an MCL sprain. Matt Eberflus, their coach, says, I'm not ruling him out. Well, if you ask any doctor, if you're going to diagnose a guy with an MCL sprain, the likelihood of him playing 7 days later is pretty low. So,
are they going to wait until 90 minutes before Sunday Night Football and then everyone cries about it?
Who's the Bears' fourth receiver? Oh, I knew I was going to be part of the three wide receiver package on Friday.
On Wednesday when they said he has a sprain in Seattle.
Well, the thing is, if the Bears' currently fourth wide receiver has a big day that is being interviewed after the game, the Texans have a big problem.
Yeah.
If he's in the Jordan Mason role
Jones is answering questions.
If he's talking about how great his game was and, oh, I kind of knew I was going to play on Thursday afternoon. Oh, okay. Sure, it'll be another story for NFL Twitter to get upset about, but for the most part, that means the Texans have a real problem in the secondary of a guy they try to replace by taking another receiver in the first round is now having a big day against you. Let's have that not be the case. Let's have the Bears' subterfuge not be a story.
Okay.
I'm going to look for that. I'm going to need the Texans to shut down Caleb Williams. Look, he can break 120 yards. That's fine. 220, I got a problem. He can't. I don't need him breaking 220 a week after not breaking 100.
You're going to be okay with the Texans letting Caleb Williams have the best game of his career?
Well,
by throwing for over 100 yards.
Yes,
That's your standard. Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, technically, you are correct. Anything.
I want to be better than the Titans, so I want Caleb Williams to struggle more.
What about the game two bounce you expect from a rookie quarterback? You got to. Take that into account, too, that the Texans can't be held to the same standard as the Titans because it was week one, his first start of his career. It's his second start now.
This is such a September football, what's it called, just saying, hey, you know, no one, you never improve more than from week one to week two.
That's probably not true. In fact, for the most part, it's not true. That's said generally about entire teams.
Yes.
But I've seen quarterbacks be terrible for multiple weeks and then finally get it together. That's not true about quarterbacks, yeah.
We saw Jordan Love became the highest paid quarterback for 15 minutes because he was good the last 8 games.
Yes. So it's only a dumb thing to say, and they only use it about teams. The quarterbacks, you can wait. I don't think he's going to throw for under 100 yards if he plays the full game. I know that's the lofty standard you want to hold this Texans team to.
Actually, Prize Picks is offering.
Look at this. This nice tie-in.
This isn't.
It's not your time for this, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But they're offering the 0.5 yards more every week for Caleb Williams.
Okay. Are you taking that?
Let's have the less hit. 0 yards
passing. I think you're asking too much from the Texans.
No. 0 yards passing.
Too much. I ain't going to go by the standard the Titans set in week one because it had less to do with the Titans and more to do with your young quarterback. You can't hold the Texans to that standard.
Okay, can I want at least one?
One interception, one turnover from the quarterback.
And one 19-yard sack like he took in week one?
Yeah, that's probably always going to be a fear.
I need
for
Neil
the Bears.
Hunter to remind him that this isn't the Pac-12. How about that as the standard? I want to be able to come in on Monday and be like, Caleb Williams, this isn't the Pac-12
Well, the
anymore.
Titans already did that.
But I want to do it, too.
Okay. You want a second reminder because he didn't get it the first time. Okay.
Because
he was
trying that Mickey Mouse stuff again.
Running around, holding the ball forever. He needs to try to dance around the pocket in the Texans and say, you're not doing that here. Yeah. I'll take that.
We're not Washington State.
I'll go with that. Yeah. He can't get away with one of those things where he holds the ball for 10 seconds and makes a play. That can't happen on Sunday night. I agree.
Thank you.
Now, Kamari Lassiter, stick with the receivers while he's running around like that. Maybe that won't happen.
Hey, he didn't play in the Pac-12 either. he played SEC ball.
I know. That's why he can't allow it to happen.
Yeah.
But for Kamari Lassiter, who despite only giving up, I believe, the one catch, he did have the one penalty. No double moves. Let's stick with your guys. That's all we're asking for.
Yeah.
It will be a focus of the Texans this week, because the only reason that game was close is because they could not shut down the explosive plays. The Colts' success rate wasn't great from play to play. It was the Texans' bust, and in some cases, Anthony Richardson's arm on the first touchdown. That I don't know if it's bad coverage. You don't expect that ball to get to where it got, but it did. Caleb Williams has a big arm himself. It ain't Anthony Richardson-like, but he's a guy who's capable of making big plays down the field. At least we saw it in college. So clean that up. I think the Texans have a pretty easy time of it, although the Bears are a little salty on the defense. So if the Texans have a flaw offensively with their line right now, at least through week one, it's the inability to pick up the games. The Colts did that quite a bit, and that's how they got their sacks. Clean that up. Don't get free runners in on your quarterback. Reduce the number of hits. And then we're probably talking about the Texans being 2-0, which is a nice start. And I wouldn't call it a soft start to the schedule, because the Colts are a division rival. You went on the road. But this is an opportunity to pick up some wins, and the Bears are just next on the list. I don't want to have a conversation on Monday about, man, 1-1, huh?
Caleb Williams' breakout game.
Can't have it.
Break out in week three.
Save that for week three. Exactly. Save that for week three. Roma Dunze, Keenan. I don't want to hear about Vincic, Keenan Allen on Monday. I don't want that.
Or you know who? You know a wide receiver who's always underrated. You know, DJ Moore. You know, yeah. Always under the radar.
Oh, they got Cole Kmet untracked. None of that.
Oh no, I don't want anyone in my fantasy league picking up Cole Kmet
because of what he did on Sunday night.
Time
oh,
in his career.
Had Cole Kmet on my bench. I don't need those tweets on Sunday night after the game. Can't believe I had him on my bench. And it's the Texans' job to make sure that's not the case. If you want to get in on the show, I see you, Willie P. We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to get in? 713-780-3776.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Willie P., who had nice words yesterday. Apparently his father, who he put on the show, listens. Want to say thank you for that again. Willie P. wants to talk about, I imagine, the official news that finally came down yesterday in the middle of, or at least right before the U.S. put on another, let's say, disappointing performance against New Zealand. We did get some new news about, well, it's new old news as far as you should be concerned, because it's been out for weeks now. But they have an official manager, a new manager for the U.S. national team. It's Mauricio Pochettino. Willie P., what's up, man?
Hey, good morning, Dallas. How y'all doing?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
You know, I can't call it same crap, different toilet. You know what they say.
Do they say that?
My dad says that.
Okay. Shut up. All right, we'll take it then.
Okay. All right, good, good, good. So I watched the game yesterday, all 100 minutes of that terrible display. You said it was disappointing. Let's be real. That was just, it was just a crap display. I get it, like you said on Monday, the substitute teacher's in charge. And he played a lot of people. He played a lot of no-name people, you know. And, you know, Pulisic was on the bench, you know. There was no Weston McKinney, no Timothy Weah. And for the first 45 minutes, I'm thinking to myself, if we can't score this New Zealand team that ain't been to the World Cup in 2010, do we really think things are going to change with Mauricio Pochettino? And what's crazy is we brought in Pulisic in, what, the 16-something minute, and I realized two things last night. One, the U.S. don't got no dogs on that team. They ain't got no fight. We don't have anybody who's willing to take somebody one-on-one like a Vinicius Jr. or Rodrigo or an Mbappe. And that's crazy. And the second thing I realized is that although Christian Pulisic is doing well at AC Milan, he is not who we think he is. He because he's so much better than the rest of the people on the roster, we project him into this superstar stratosphere. And I'm starting to realize that when everybody wants to compare Pochettino with Tottenham when he took over to Pochettino's taking over the U.S., no, it's more like back in 2013 when Pochettino was in charge of Southampton and they surprised everybody by finishing eighth in the Premier League with a bunch of young players like Adam Lallana and Luke Shaw. Pochettino has some work on his hands. I think the first thing he needs to do, one, nix all MLS players. No MLS players. Two, if you can't take a player on one-on-one, you can't be on the field because that's the only way we're going to get things done on the international stage. I just want to get your opinion on it. I'm happy that we have him, but damn, that game last night was trash, and I'm sick of watching it. If it ain't the women, I don't want nothing to do with it. You guys have a great day. Sean A. Mace, what it do, baby? You guys later. Peace.
Appreciate it. If it ain't the women, I don't want nothing to do with it. I would agree, but in a different context. But as far as U.S. soccer is concerned, I caught a bit of it. I wasn't going to watch that game. Why? Why would I do that? As you mentioned, a lot of changes. Pulisic came in and scored. And he said it after the game that there needs to be a new mentality. I'm not sure he just meant taking people on one-on-one, but U.S. soccer, particularly the, you want to call them the old heads, they love to lean into grit and the belief and all those things. And yes, that's very important. You want to believe that you can win despite that stupid slogan by, what are they called again? What's the fan group called again?
The American
Outlaws?
Yeah.
I believe that we can win. One of the worst things.
We will win.
Oh, not so much recently, I guess. It's still stupid no matter how.
I believe I can win.
I believe that we will win.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
We can win is a little bit. That's some soft link. I believe we'll be in an opportunity to win.
I guess as soft as this player pool from what people believe. So that's been part of American soccer culture. We try hard. We want it more than you, blah, 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 blah. And it turns out, at least right now, that a lot of people are blaming the lack of that on why this team isn't living up to the standard. And maybe some of that plays a part. But I do agree they don't have enough dynamic players. We've been looking for a number nine, a striker for years now. Everyone was excited about Balogun being here, and that's still a young player. We just see these phenoms around the world set out very young and take over. No, we don't have any Jude Bellingham types. You mentioned we don't have a Vinicius. Yeah, we don't have a world-class player who will be up for Ballon d'Or awards. We don't have an Mbappe. I don't know if that'll ever come. But neither do teams who have made good runs in World Cups in the past. So I don't think we need that type. We just, hopefully, Pochettino is the guy. We need an entire way of doing things. And frankly, the contract says he's around through the World Cup. So he's not going to be someone who changes the entire structure of U.S. soccer. He is here for this particular player pool and this particular tournament, the World Cup, and they want to make a good run. The foundation of U.S. soccer is probably eroded and not one that has a very good foundation, but he's not here for that. He's not going to revitalize the program from top to bottom. He's here to take whatever 40 best players he can look at and go, these are the guys I'm going to put together to potentially have a good run in America. So he's a short-timer, at least right now.
Here for a good time, not a long time.
Hopefully a good time, yeah.
I agree with Willie P, though. No more MLS players. No, if you play for the MLS, you're not playing for the team USA.
That's a tough thing because U.S. soccer and MLS are right. They're in lockstep with a lot of things, so it's a tough thing. Look, I just
don't want the visual of
understood.
You know, a defender who plays for
Columbus.
Yeah, the Columbus
one of the
crew,
one of the best teams.
And it's like, well, you know, he's going to have to lock down Vinicius today. It's like,
not great.
This doesn't seem like it's going to go well.
It's not great. Like, obviously, I don't know if Anthony Robinson played yesterday. He plays in the Premier League. He's one of the best. I think he's a left back in the Premier League. So that's he's been the choice for the U.S. for a while now. So that's what you want as far as the level of player you're getting
Walker
right now.
Walker Zimmerman,
the guy who fouled someone in the box in the last World Cup and gave a penalty because you know what you shouldn't do? When the guy's back is turned to goal, don't kick at him or pull him down. Just make him face you before you try to make a move. Yeah, so I get what you're saying.
This isn't Sporting KC, buddy.
I get what Willie P is saying. You want players who are playing at the highest level.
Not the San Jose Earthquakes.
Yeah, it doesn't inspire confidence, does it? But new manager, new coach. He'll bring his own. He's bringing his entire crew with him. So you're not going to have any Berhalter holdovers. It looks like. So if you didn't want that infection to remain, it looks like it's being cut out. And we'll see where we go from here.
So he has his own like coaching. He has he's Kyle Shanahan with the Mike McDaniel.
He has his Mike McDaniel. He has his Sean McVay's. He has those guys. But those guys, I don't know if they've aspired to rise to the big job. They've been with them for years. They're going to come with them.
Wait until they win the World Cup with Team USA. Then the offers will come.
Are they playing? Are they going to buy the next FIFA game? Is that what you're talking about? Is that how they're going to do it? Look, I am all about a coach can change how things work, but even I don't think a World Cup win is happening.
Easy draw, you know.
Let's
win one in penalties.
Win a knockout round game.
Okay.
In a major tournament. When was the last time that's happened? Since like the Confederations Cup back in like 2009 or something
League
like
of
that.
Nations.
I said a major tournament, Sean. It's Nations League, by the way, not League of Nations.
I think I made it the League of Shadows from Batman.
Was Ra's al Ghul on the goalie in the penalty shootout? Yeah. The guy's been – Pochettino's finalized. That's cool. We move on, and we'll see where the player pool – how they respond and maybe how it changes. Maybe he has his eyes on some players who haven't got a shot yet. That always happens when a new manager comes and you see these players who you might like or maybe never heard of get their shot. So that's the big news in U.S. soccer. We still are pretty stinky when it comes to on-the-field stuff, and they're going to try to change that with the new manager. When we come back, we're going to talk about the team in Dallas. Not because we care about the Cowboys, but I do care that Jerry Jones is being very vocal and doesn't like how his players handle their contract situation. We'll hear from Jerry on Dak and CeeDee when we come back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Unlike the Texans who signed Nico Collins very early, it was a non-issue as far as his contract situation was concerned. The Cowboys waited. CeeDee Lamb was first, and then Dak Prescott. That announcement was made right before the season kicked off, at least the Sunday slate kicked off. Dak Prescott signs his deal. Maybe it was orchestrated. Who knows? Maybe the Cowboys wanted to be the center of attention on a Sunday. I don't know. That's just one conspiracy. Well, Jerry Jones was on The Fan up in Dallas. He was on the Shan and RJ show. And he explained to them, after being asked, why it took so long. Well, he explained why it took so long. And Jerry may be just like us when it comes to evaluating his quarterback. Here's Jerry Jones.
Oh, well, I think, first of all, what if you're not right? What if you're not right? What if you're wrong? You shouldn't have extended it. Then have you ever thought that in any case, I'm not talking about Dak's contract at all, but in any case, Secondly, it's a real misnomer to think that you had a meeting of the minds at this level that we ended up. Once it's done, you said, why couldn't you all have gotten that done yesterday? That's easy. Just paying the most money ever. Well, you have no idea where you were close to a meeting of the minds. Dak, of course, had the ability to play this out this year and be free in a market that could really reward that very much. And the assumption you're making when you say late in the game on any of these players, have we ever signed the players early and then sorry that we signed them? You guys get your memory cap out. We have, haven't we? Okay. Signed them way 2 years too early, mm-hmm. A year too early. Didn't see enough. So it does happen. And you're dealing with such an inexact, it's comparable
okay.
to.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it. So he goes on to say that I will say this. Anytime that we've ever made players the highest paid player, key players such as Troy Aikman, the highest paid player in the game, we've won Super Bowls. So that is a direct – I don't know if he's even right about that, but as far as what he's saying, he's challenging Dak. Hey, we're going to pay you like the best player in the game. Now you got to go out there and win. And he also talked about how once you get your money, all the feelings about being hurt about how long it took go away, which is true. He did not like how it was handled, though. He thought it could have been done differently. He said that both his star players tried to play hardball with him. But the initial thing he said caught me when he was like, you don't know. And then he tried to clean it up by saying, well, I'm not talking about Dak. I'm just talking about contracts in general. No, you're talking about Dak. Because that's how we all think about Dak Prescott, right or wrong. Is giving him that money right? Is he going to live up to the money? Is he going to help you win a title? Because we haven't seen it before. Jerry had the same concerns that anyone else who has to think about giving a quarterback a lot of money have. Sure, he's my guy. You want to project that we believe in him totally and he's going to be the guy to lead us to a title. But he wasn't sure. Their actions said they weren't sure. And it cost them more than it would have earlier. But you were put into a corner. Either you pay him or you lose him. And you had no answer and no plan to respond to a potential loss of your franchise quarterback. But I appreciate Jerry Jones being like us in one sense. He ain't sure about Dak either. I wasn't sure about him. I'm not sure. But eventually I had to pay him, and that's kind of how we all figured it would play out, and Dak Prescott will be a Cowboy for the foreseeable future.
Yes, correct on Dak Prescott. What about CeeDee Lamb?
He should have been sure on CeeDee Lamb. I feel like he should have been sure on CeeDee Lamb. What questions did you have about CeeDee Lamb? I mean, it was pretty clear. CeeDee Lamb's a great receiver. Maybe top three in the game. What are you waiting on? Dak, I get. That's an understandable result that you waited, and then eventually you decide, oh, we ain't got no outs here, so we got to give him his money. But CeeDee, just give that man.
They turned on the Colorado-Nebraska game. Like,
you continue to think it would have been Shador. It could have been Carson Beck. You never know.
It's gonna be Shador, or it would have
the
been
top. Shador. You think Shador? Jerry loves a star, but
that's why.
But
that's why the man had to have the card taken out of his hand. To
well,
draft
Steven
Johnny
is still
Manziel.
There. Steven Jones is still there, right? He could take the card away from him again.
At least then they had Romo.
That's true.
Yeah, this situation that would have lost Dak.
It would have been tough to keep Jerry from taking Shador Sanders because he would have. I don't think he's hiring Deion to be the coach, but taking Shador. Didn't Shador grow up in Texas?
I know he went to high school in Dallas. I'm pretty sure he went to high school in Dallas.
So yeah, it would have been a difficult. Someone would have had to drug Jerry on the day of the draft.
Oh, give him some sleeping pills.
Something. Something.
Just right as the draft starts. Just
slip something in his, I'm sure he drinks a very expensive liquor, whatever it might be. Slip it into the drink.
Oh, not on draft night. Come on.
Stop it. Stop it. Slip it right into the drink, and then when he wakes up, oh, look, they took Carson Beck. Carson Beck's your quarterback.
I will say slipping a 80-something-year-old sleeping pills. It's a dangerous game.
That's why you heavy dose of melatonin gummies.
Okay.
Like I said, the recommended two, you give him four. So he can't keep himself awake, but it'll be fine eventually, but he's just knocked out.
They're going to have a pick, you know, hopefully in the teens or 20s.
Yeah, so.
It'll be late.
You know.
It'll be like 10 o'clock.
Right around pick five, you make sure he takes the melatonin gummies.
Have a big dinner.
Yeah, and he's just passed out. And then he'll wake up and go, what happened? Oh, Carson Beck. Actually, got to wake him up beforehand. He's got to make the call. Drowsy call to Carson Beck.
It's like Inception. He has to think it's his idea.
Yeah. The top is spinning. That's the only way you keep him away from Shador Sanders, if they had not given him the money, Dak the money. But they don't have to worry about that anymore. No drugging of your owner, because you've given Dak Prescott all the money you could. It's a give and take. There's a balance between these two things. Am I going to have to drug this man and maybe kill him? Or give Dak Prescott $60 million a year? I gotta make a choice.
I love Jerry Jones. I'm going to miss him so much when he's gone.
Yeah, I get it because we're here, so there's a reason not to like the Cowboys. But Jerry Jones specifically,
I'd
all of it.
Jerry.
Give me more. Give me more Jerry Jones. The Cowboys, I don't care. But Jerry Jones, I love it.
I love that he has a weekly radio hit on the...
Yeah, we think Cal is out and about doing things. Cal's got...
He does two segments with Shannon and RJ.
Yeah, with Shannon and RJ, whoever the hell they are. It's not like Bill Belichick hanging out with Pat McAfee, getting paid whatever he's getting paid to do it. We got Jerry Jones, one of the most famous owners in the NFL, just hanging out with Shannon RJ. He's probably been doing it with whoever's been filling that slot for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And now it's Shannon RJ's turn. And Jerry Jones dropping bombs.
I love the post game interviews. Like it's so
his
great.
Willingness to say
to
whatever
like,
the
I
hell.
Don't know. The reason we didn't sign Dak earlier, I wasn't sure if he was good enough to get signed.
And he goes, "You guys should think back to all the times we made a mistake on this, right?" And all the guys with the fake media laugh.
Yeah, Roy Williams.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he wanted them to actually name the names.
Oh, okay.
Just remember them. Just keep them in the back of your head, but don't list all my failures. I'm not looking for that. Who's looking for that? All right, we're done with hour one. And Jerry Jones, clearly not done with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Jerry, CeeDee Lamb's really good. Don't worry about that one. The hesitance on your quarterback, completely understood. A lot of us feel the same way. Okay, we're an hour in. Hour in coming up. I'm going to give you a chance to win something. When we get back, you are going to get a chance to check out the Cougs against the Owls coming up here on Saturday. So stay tuned for that. We'll give away those tickets. And also, we still have listener appreciation tickets to give away for our party here in the building on September 20th. 1 hour down. We'll be back.